Today's Perek is Shmuel Beis, Perek Yud Gimel. So, we are at a critical moment. We have found in the last Perek that David HaMelech has managed to recover. And at the end of the Perek, we even find him in a particular fascinating position in which he has now taken over what it was that Yehoshua was supposed to be Zoche, and he's come and he's destroyed not only the enemies stretching from Nachal Mitzrayim all the way to Nahar Prat. He's taken over even Ammon and Moab. According to the way that Chazal understand it, he's dragged them through the dirt, has crushed their bodies under threshing boards, has busted them and broken them and taught them a lesson they will not soon forget, which is the way the Targum and the Medrash understands that last horrible place about the Charitzei HaBarzel and the Morig Bal Shtei Pipiot, as the David later refers to it, and doing that to all of the various cities of Ammon. Not quickly will that be a lesson that's forgotten, as far as the cruelty is concerned of the Umay Yisraelam. We can be just as cruel, and sometimes that's important, as we saw was the problem with Shaul. You're a fey nefesh, you end up being in trouble. But not only that, we found that, again, according to Chazal, we have a magic crown at the end of the story, in which he takes the crown that was meant to be the sign of the Molech. And according to Chazal, it says Kikar Zahav. If it's Kikar Zahav, it would clearly crush the skull of anybody who attempted to put it on his head. So it could not possibly have weighed a Kikar Zahav unless, as the Gemara says, the Evan Yikara that was in it was a magnetic flotation device. So according to the Gemara, what happened was, is in order to give this awe to the Molech, what they did was, is they technologically managed to float this thing in midair over the Molech, you see. And that way it was clear, this Asimov took that into consideration in the foundation, where he had the foundation providing this magnetically levitated crown and throne for the king to, you know, try to make him into a god king. Comes directly from this Medrash, which he was a bookie, by the way. And so the thing that happens over here is a new awe has come over David HaMelech, who's able to sit with this magnetic levitation device. But B, this becomes now the sign of the Malchus of David. Because the idea is that if you could not wear this thing, you were not from Malchut Beit David. And what happened is that, again, Min HaShemayim, this became a symbol. It fit only on someone who had the genetic construction of David HaMelech's skull. Otherwise, it would not fit in the millimeter that it was able to be supported, and it would crush it. So Mamela, this became an actual simon, magical simon, of Malchus Beit David. And that's the importance for this whole story that there should be Bavatalit. It wasn't that David is so desperate for a beautiful crown, obviously. It was that this entire thing was a sign of the reconstituted Malchus, which was the end where he comes and Yoav calls him out and he brings out the entire army and once again reasserts that conquest is a national goal and not a Yochid's goal. Problem is, however, as we know, all of this occurs immediately after the curses that Natan HaNavi tell him are doomed to occur over his home. So we already found the death of Yelet. There's going to be more disaster to come today, as we saw. And the worst thing is that, as David HaMelech records in Tehillim, Rabim omrim lenafshi, ein yishu'ata lo, b'lohim sela, or matayamut v'avad shemo. This is not a very popular malchut. And what's interesting is that if you take a look at the contrast between the first part of the story of David and the last part of the story of David, there's one very important thing, and there's a line in yesterday's parak that shows us in a painful way. It says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends a message, call his name Yedidya, Bavur Hashem, because it says Vashem Ahevo. You'll notice that up until those lines, every time that we talk about David, it's in terms of love, the dod. And really, everybody loves David, and it keeps using that word, Ahava. So Yonatan loves David, and Shaul loves David, and everybody, it says, all of Yisrael, Ahavu, everybody loves David. Well, they don't love him anymore. Nobody loves David. From this point on, nobody loves David. All of Tehillim describes the hatred of David, the Sonei David, the way in which he's now no longer out there among the people the way he used to be. He was talking to his men as if they're Achai. That doesn't occur again. Instead, we find David really alone, as an old man, he's there and has nothing, nobody really around him, except it's all business. When he has to be taken into business, it's business. Everything has changed. That's the truth. And as we know from Chazal, we're going to see more of later, David HaMelech views this as part of what he was destined to go through. So it was David, it was Mekim Olah Shel Teshuvah. So that even though everybody is calling him the guy, Matay Yamut, oh, we'd love him to die so we can finally get to a Beis HaMikdash. Says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, no. I'd rather have you than a Beis HaMikdash any day. And what's amazing is that on the day of the Knis of HaMikdash, when David HaMelech had asked during his lifetime, so he told HaKadosh Baruch Hu, says the Gemara, can't you let people know that you've forgiven me? It's just mutton tells me, but could we not make some sign? Says HaKadosh Baruch Hu to him, during your lifetime, I'm not going to let it be known. And you'll suffer. People will think that indeed, Ein Yeshua Solo B'Elohim Sela, this guy is hopeless. But after you die, people will know. And what was that day? When they came to bring the very Aron HaBris, which was the thing that David was the one that had reconstituted the chashivas for the Aron HaBris, in which, as he said, and it says this Beferish Divrei HaYamim, that yeah, Bimei Shaul, nobody cared about the Aron HaBris. They left it there for 20 years, sitting in the closet, basically. I was the one who was Malad. I was the one who cared about it. It was that Halah of the Aron we saw earlier was the whole essence of the Simchas HaMitzvah LaHalacha, which David now is the one to glorify and to define. At that moment, when the Beis HaMikdash was built, the Shlomo HaMelech attempts to bring in the Aron HaBris into the Beis HaMikdash, the doors will not open. He can't get it into the Beis HaMikdash. So until, says the Gemara, until he said the words, Zechor Lechazke David Avi, the doors wouldn't open. It was only at that moment, and at that moment the doors opened. V'nefchu pnei oyvei David kishulei akedera. So at that point, all of his enemies, they gave up. What more can you say? And this, of course, is now Mizmor Shir Chanukat HaBayit LeDavid. Hafachta mispedi l'molcholim. Pitachta sakif et azreli simcha. This is Mizmor Shir Chanukat HaBayit. So the beginning of the very Beit HaMikdash that David HaMelech was so committed to, that ended up doing all of these wars and all of these preparations only as the beginning for. The very Aron HaBris that he was absolutely committed to. And the very teshuva, which he needs now to represent, and as the Gemara puts it, lo David ra'ui lo tomase, and lo Yisrael ru'in lo tomase. The ma'aseh egel also, because that's outrageous, you're right. It surely is. But it's what happened to David is outrageous, what happened to Klal Yisrael is outrageous. It's really very nice for everybody to be saying, en Yeshua sova be'ruin. In the same way that the Mishkan was a creation of the ma'aseh egel, and that Moshe Rabbeinu said, okay, so now we need more. So too was the Migdash a creation of the failure of David. And that's why it's included in the Mizmor Shir Chanukas HaBayis of David. What are we talking about? Migdash is the creation of David HaMelech's tshuva, right? So that's why it's at that moment that the Kayach of tshuva, and that's what the Beis HaMikdash is. It's called Yar HaLevanon, because it's Milabenet Avonoteim Shal Yisrael. So this is the source. This is the Mizbeach, where everybody comes sad and goes out happy, as the Gemara puts it. That's Yerushalayim, this Mesos. Why is it Mesos Darvador? Because it's the place at which a person can recreate themselves and get kapora for what it is that was destroying them. And that's exactly what it is that the Malchus ends up needing to create. The Malchus is not meant to be the success. The Malchus is meant to be the success out of failure. And that's true of Bryas HaOlam as a whole. Creation is not meant to be a success story. It's meant to be failure that ends with success. And that's clear throughout. That's why the world was created with a hay, as Rashi says, because it's so easy to fall out the bottom of the hay. And that's exactly what happens. David HaMelech, the taller you are, the harder you fall. And that's exactly, as the Gemara points, that's what happens to Klal Yisrael at Matan Torah. So everybody's sitting around judging David and not taking into consideration that's the essence of the Malchus. And essentially, that's why the Malchus represents the entire struggle with the original issues that were raised in Gan Eden, which were sexual issues. Obviously, that was the Shneihem Arumim, and they needed to cover their genitals. That's the underlying nature of Avera. It's always called Stam Avera. That's what Avera means. And the struggle that David has is the struggle of humanity with evil. And in the end, the struggle with Avodah Zarah, which was the first step here, that he's able to take over the Avodah Zarah of Ammon. It becomes now the symbol of his own Malchus. And in the end, when he takes Avishag HaShunamit, it's the struggle with sexuality, that he's the only one in all of history that was in that kind of position, other than Boaz, which was the source of David himself. And in the end, becomes successful. And through that is Mavir, the Malchus, to his son Shlomo, the one that now HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves instead. So, clearly, the story to come is going to hearken back in many ways to the difficult things that David has gone through, because we're listening and waiting for the sword to fall and the mita keneged mita to become evident. And in its becoming evident, I'd like you to listen carefully to all of the key tonalities that recreate, amazingly, the story of Yosef and Potiphar's wife, of Yosef in the Bor, of Yehuda and Tamar, of Shechem and Dinah. The words are used all over because we're talking about something that was originally the contrast of Yehuda with Yosef. There it was, the female attempt to grab a male, and here it's vice versa. And the rape, of course, was the male attempt of Shechem. And here now we have the interrelationship. This is the place in which the question of infatuation, uncontrolled need, love sickness, and so on, is expressed in Tanakh, and becomes the makor of the din of the Gezerah not to be miyachid, even with a betulah. Until this time, we viewed the questions of arayot as being arayot. If it's something is incestuous, we need to protect against it. If something is just, it's just a question of two unmarried people, we really don't care that much. As the Gemara puts it, what's the big deal that we're making such a big deal about this one? And Enochinami, it all ties back to Tamar, who now becomes the makor of the pirsum, of the issues that can devolve from unfettered sexuality without any type of understanding of the need for controls, and is now the first step in the tikkun of David in a very, very painful way. And so it was after this, and that already tells you, oh no, not after that, please. Yep. Right ahead. That's it. It's the next step. Ula'av Shalom ben David achot yafa, ushma Tamar. This already sounds terrible. So Avshalom has a sister, a beautiful sister. Her name is Tamar. Now, this is weird. What do you mean Avshalom, the son of David, has a beautiful sister? I mean, generally speaking, if the son of David has a sister, then David has a beautiful daughter by the name of Tamar. What in the world is this supposed to mean? So as Chazal tell us, we know exactly what this means. It means that Tamar was not David's legal daughter. How does that make sense? Because we were already told that David took Ma'acha, and from Ma'acha, who was a Yifat Toar, we know where she comes from, took Ma'acha, and then had with this Ma'acha his son Avshalom. But it was at that point that he was actually married to Ma'acha. But before he was married to Ma'acha, he got her pregnant with Tamar as a Yefat Toar. Now, as the Gemara tells us, that's already a disaster, because we're talking about Kol Mishin Osei Bat Yefat Toar. So he's going to have a Ben Sorer Moreh, because that's the next parasha. So my time alo darash to smuchim, as Itay Agiti says to David. Understand? You knew that was going to happen, didn't you? I mean, you saw the interrelationship with the parashas. That's clear that David HaMelech's interest was exactly the way the Arachayim explains the whole idea of Yifas Torah. It's all the Balei Kabbalah, but he's the one who makes the greatest statement in which the idea of war is assimilation. And in the same way that David makes a tremendous fuss about the Shalal HaMilchama, as we saw at the close of yesterday's parak, part of the Shalal HaMilchama is the genetic information of the Umasayim. And so wherever it's possible to incorporate that, David himself comes from Moab and takes advantage of that. His son is going to be coming from Amon, right? Because that's the daughter from Amon that ends up, his grandson, Yerovam, Rehoboam, is going to need to come from the other of that story of Lot. So all of this is something that is very much in his mind. The way the Gemara puts it, he had 400 children from Yifator. Right. The Maisa, the Mefarshim say, doesn't mean he literally had his own 400 children. It means that from his family or from his soldiers that he had taught to bring in these people into Klal Yisrael, there were 400 kids that had been born, all of whom he took into his own Pamalia and made them his Baalei Egrofim, is the Lashon. They were the scary ones. These were the guys that were 7 feet high. They looked like, the Gemara says, but I thought he only took Miuchasim to Tzadikim. It's true. That's in terms of actual fighting, but you got to scare these guys. So these were the people he put in front, but they couldn't fight because you needed to have complete Tzadikim fighting. And these weren't the complete Tzadikim. But the Goyim don't know that, so they thought these were the guys that were fighting. So he scared them with these guys. So they were the Baalei Egrofim, but they didn't actually do that. But whatever it is, he is clearly very, very interested in this whole idea of Yifas Torah. And this Achot Yafa. So Achot Yafa reminds you of where she came from. And so although she looked at herself as Avshalom's sister, so she looked at herself as Avshalom's sister, but clearly not in the context of she and the other children, because Avshalom was also from the same woman, but after he had married her, and that it said Beferish earlier when we listed the boys that he had. And his first son had been Amnon, who was unrelated to Tamar, because it was not from the same mothers. I mean, it was no relationship at all. She's a Goya, so to speak, because she was Horata Shelo B'Kedusha. So even though now she's Sheira and so on and so forth, but she's unrelated to them. So Amnon, Amnon now is the next in line to the throne. Amnon falls in love with Tamar. Vayaveh Amnon ben David. Now, what's amazing, again, if you take into consideration the way in which David represents the nature of love, the contrast in the Mishnah of the real love and unreal love is the story of David's love of Yonatan versus the love of Amnon with Tamar. So that basically we're just a few prakim apart in indicating what is the ultimate love affair and what is the ultimate infatuation affair in Tanakh, in the Mishnah. So obviously this statement about Hashem Ohavo and all of that, it really is a line that's being drawn that becomes a line in the Mishnah to define the difference between real love and infatuation. So when it says over here that he loved her, he didn't love her. Vayaveh means we can use that word to describe an obsession. Vayetzer la'amnon, look, he was so driven, so unbelievably pained, he just couldn't live anymore without having her. And to the point where he actually got sick. Vayetzer la'amnon le'yitchalot b'avor Tamar. The man became so obsessed in his need to sleep with this girl. And he was literally sick from it. Because, ki betulahi, since she was a betula, there would be no way for him to get near her. If she was a loose girl, if she wasn't doing according to Minhag HaBetulot, where they never went out, and what was with chaperones, and so on and so forth, you know, he could have figured out a way that they could get together. But since she was a betula, vayipalei b'nei Amnon la'asot la ma'uma, it was like impossible for him to conceive of ever being able to get together with her alone. So now, Ula Amnon Rea. Now, Amnon had a good friend, and we're going to see what kind of friend this guy is. You know, some friend. Ushmo Yonadav ben Shimachi David. So he was David's nephew, Yonadav. V'Yonadav Ish Chachama. Oh, this guy's really smart. A real bastard, but very smart. There are people that are smart, as the Gemara puts it. There are people that are Chachamim La'Rea. They're smart, all right. They're smart in figuring out how to destroy things. So this guy was very smart. Vayomelo, so every day, I mean, just listen, we're going to see that this Yonadav is always pushing himself and his chashivut and his brilliance. So here he is now speaking to the next in line for the throne, the Bechor of David, Bechoro Amnon, as we said earlier. And so he's talking to him, you know, you're the prince. How come every morning you look depressed? Babokra, babokra. Alo tagivi, tell me what the problem is. So he finally opens up to him. Again, it's so obvious that it's not his sister, right? Well, what a crazy way to say something. I'm in love with my brother Avshalom's sister. I mean, what is that supposed to mean? Is that people think that Chazal are out looking for excuses. It's just simple reading of the words. It's clear that the yichus that she has is to Avshalom, not to the rest of the family. That's what she senses, that she shares, because they're both children of Yefastor, of the same one.
So she's not really a sister to him.
No, she's allowed to be, we're going to see. She could have been married to him. So Vayomer lo Yonadav, so this good, brilliant friend Yonadav says, look, I have a great idea. I mean, you need to be alone with this girl. You're never going to be alone with this girl under normal circumstances. But I could tell you what to do. Pretend that you're seriously ill. Shkava mishkafcha v'yitcha. Let it be known that you're dying. I mean, uba v'icha lirotecha, your father will come to visit you, and you'll tell him there's only one thing's going to save my life. I mean, I need a girl that can really take care of me, and I have no appetite. I can't eat. I mean, let her make some nice crepes right here, and I'll get turned on, and then, you know, maybe I'll be able to be restored to health. But otherwise, Dad, I think it's goodbye. So, okay. So tell him, Tavona Tamar Achoti V'Tavreni Lechem. You make sure that you don't say it's Avshalom's sister now. Make it very clear it's my sister. I have no interest in it, no sexual interest in my sister, obviously. So let my sister Tamar, she cares about me, and let her come in V'Tavreni Lechem. She'll nourish me, you know. Even though I don't have an appetite, Vastala Inayata Biryami, she makes something really nice right in front of me, you know. Lamana Shira, I'll get excited. And then V'Achalti Miyada, maybe if she feeds me, you know, puts it into my mouth, you know, that would do it. Okay, he says, oh, that's a good idea. Vayishkav Amnon Vayitchal Vayavo HaMelech Lirato. Sure enough, Yonadav's got this whole thing worked out perfectly. The king does come to see him. I mean, after all, he's the Yoresh Ha'etzer, next in line. Vayomer Amnon El HaMelech, Dad, I think it's all over. There's only one hope. Tavona Tamar Achoti, Vatelabev Leinai, you know, some pancakes, linses, something. You know, something small. I mean, there's not much I can do, you know. Maybe two pancakes, Shtei Levivot. That will put me over the edge. I'll maybe start getting better. The Evrem Yada. And here is this horrific. David himself is the one who sends Tamar to her doom. So Vishlach David El Tamar Habaita Leimor, Lechina Beit Amnon Achich. Vasilo Habirya, you know, your brother is seriously ill. We have to take care of him. He's the Bafar. Why don't you go there and make him something to get him well? Vatelech Tamar Beit Amnon Achia. And so she's convinced by David, he must know that, you know, this guy wouldn't have any sexual interest in me. He thinks he's a brother. Okay. Vushokev, he's lying there. Vatikachata Batseik, Vatalash, Vatala Beblainav, Vatavashilata Levivivot. And so she's making these delicious crepes. The house smells great. And Vatikach et Hamasret Vatitzok Lefanav, and so she goes and she makes all types of, the Gemara says the Masret means a frying pan, like right in front of him, she can, which they do in good restaurants, you know, so they'll pour it right there in front of you and they'll light it, you know, and it's really exciting, and she brings it, so she does it right in front of him, and she says, he says, I would love to, but you know, I can't take it. I'm so sick. You know, just get everybody out of the room. I'm so sick. But you can't eat. He says, just get everybody out of here. You understand? Again, I hope you're paying attention, right, to these words. This is already the Otsiu Kolish Me'alai. We're back to Yosef, and he's being now showing himself now in his ne'amanut to his brothers. And Vayetsu Kalish Me'alav, Vayom Ramnon Al Tamar. Look, you know, maybe if you yourself will just feed me. You know, Aviya Biryach, I gotta get it back into bed. I'm too sick. Vevremi Adech, and I'll, from you I'm able to eat it. So Vatikach Tabat Al Vivot Asher Asata, Vatavel Amnon Achia Hachadra. So she goes to the bedroom. Vatigash Elav Lechol, and so she brings him now to eat. Vayachasaba grabs her. Vayom Ramnon, he says, Boy, Shechvi Miachoti, oh, my dear sister, come on, man. I need you. Vatomer lo, so she says, Alachi, al ta'aneni, don't rape me. Ki lo ye'asech ein b'Yisrael. Again, you hear the words, right? Lo ye'asech ein b'Yisrael, l'shkavet bat Yaakov. All of these references. This is not the way to do this. Al ta'asat ha'nivala hazot, sounds familiar. Don't do such a disgusting thing. You want to sleep with me? Let's get married. Well, what am I going to do if you rape me? Ani, ana olichet cherpati. Are you crazy? There's not going to be any future for me, and everybody's going to look at you like a slob. You want to give everything up for a minute of sex? You're sick. Speak to the king. He's not going to have any objections to your marrying me. No, obviously, again, to say that she was his sister is insane. What do you mean? Sister says, speak to the king, we'll get married, and everything will be fine. So it's clear that they're not related at all.
Why did they do that?
Because all he wanted was rape. He didn't want the relationship. There was no love at all. He did not want to be married to her. The whole idea was by Mgenuvim Yimtaku. The whole idea was Isser. V'lo aval lishmo abikol. Oh, no, no, he didn't want to listen to her. Vayechezak mimena vaya'anea vayishkav ota. You'll notice, I mean, in a sense, it's even worse. This is the language of Shechem, except it's even worse. Because at least, I mean, here, the vaya'anea, it comes first. It's not vayishkav yima vaya'anea, which one is normal intercourse, one is anal intercourse. I mean, the idea of a year is the kinkier the better, as far as he's concerned. And the closer it is to real marriage, the less interest he has. And because of that, having finished with her, he hates her. Seeing himself blaming her for his own failures, classic.
He hates her because he's upset with himself for
having It's always like this.
No, but
it's always all her fault for being so beautiful. It's all her fault for me having betrayed my higher self. It's certainly not my fault. I mean, that's the way people are. Well, I mean, no, it's deeper than that. It's wherever there's a dependency on something, you're disgusted with yourself afterwards, right? So it's the same sense of failure that he has, which you blame the object of your failure. But you see yourself reflected in that object. So you hate the object. It's the utter opposite of love. If there was any truth to love, I mean, even Shechem ben Hamor wanted to marry her afterwards. I mean, he comes and he speaks, and they're angry because it's Nevelah of Israel, but he wants to marry her. You know, I'll pay whatever you want. It'll be very dignified, and the whole country will be involved, and you know. And this, he wants to have nothing to do with her. He hates her so much that greater it was the hatred that he had of her than the love that he had in her, that he had for her in the first place. Now this bothers the Gemara. Why? Because of a very profound insight. Very profound insight. The Pashtus, you read this as a typical psychological reversal in which the very dependency of it, you find this often in cults, right? Somebody was part of a cult. When he gets out of the cult, he becomes the main guy that wants to fight the cult. Or Sergeant Preacher with a mule is a classic example. Again, in Azimuth, in which the very fact that someone's mind was controlled by somebody else makes him the most profound enemy of that person when he's able to get out of that control. So this is what happens over here. What bothers Chazal is a fantastic insight, which is it can't be greater than the motivation that was there in the first place. Something's funny. How can you hate her more than you loved her? You can turn that love into hatred, but you can't hate more than you love, because it's exactly the same psychic energy that you're putting into the relationship in the first place that you're putting into the relationship now. What made it worse? It could say, "Kegodol ha'ava kach godol ha'sina," but not that it's more than the ava that was put in. It's because of that that Chazal say something must have made him hate her more, and that was the fact that she managed to castrate him in this. Ouch. Exactly. So now he is not only disgusted, but he is angry, right? Yeah. So he says to her, get the hell out of here. Vayomela amnon kumi lechi, just go. Vatomer lo, she says, what do you mean, just go? You gotta be crazy. This is even worse than the rape. You got to be crazy. What, are you going to send me out? You understand what this is going to say about you and what it's going to say about me? This is arag dola zot me'acheret asher asiti mi. This is even worse than what you did. Not to throw me out like I'm a rag. Oh no, he's still not listening. Vayikrat na'aro mishorto, so he calls the boy. He says, throw this out, please, will you? And slam the door and lock it. Shulchana et zot mi'alaya chutza. Just take this piece of crap, get it out of the room, and lock the door. And all ha'delet acharei. V'alaya kitonet pasim. Oh boy. So she is wearing now a kitonet pasim. How do you like that? I mean, the whole thing is the exact opposite. In the same way that Yehuda and Yosef were presented as opposites in the Mice of Tamar originally, that leads to Peretz, which of course is Pirtza, and that becomes now the contrast to, meanwhile, Yosef being back in Mitzrayim, where the woman is after him and it doesn't happen. It's an unbelievable contrast here. So this was a pogrom in Yehuda way back when, and indeed it was the beginning of the Malchus of Yehuda, both physically and in terms of the Hodah of Yehuda. That's when he says, Tzat Kamim, when he realizes that. So she's wearing a ketonet pasim, kichen til bashlam benot ha-melech, ha-betulot mi'ilim. For that was the way in which the Bnei HaMelech would identify themselves, the Betulot. He throws her physically out of the house and locks the door. I mean, this is unimaginable in terms of what she's going through. So Tamar, say Chazal, she wanted to make a point all over Yisrael that you can't trust men alone with women. I don't care if they come from the royal family. So the Lashon HaRimah, Im livnot malachim kach, livnot hedyotot alachat kama v'kama. Let everybody know. And im letznuot kach, leprutzot alachat kama v'kama. These are the most careful people, okay? So why was she mefarsemet? She went out of her way, at the cost of her own embarrassment, to go from place to place and say, I want you to know what happened to me. And so she puts dirt, Efer arosha. She tears it. She puts now her hand over her head, running all over the place and screaming. Avshalom sees her. Vayomer el Avshalom, Achia, her real brother, Avshalom, says to her, oh, is it little Aminun Achich? But I am, obviously, he had a nickname. You know, it was in the family. This is, in the first place, this is a Lashon Gnai. No, so when he was a little boy, they called him Aminun, Aminun. So little Aminun finally had his way with you, huh? Listen, just keep it quiet. Achichu, it's not as if some Arab came and raped you. I mean, look, he's part of the family. Don't now start obsessing about this. Vateshev Tamar v'shomema beit Avshalom achia. She is totally devastated. A wreck. David never does anything for her. The only one that's caring about this and living with it is Avshalom, her brother. Now, it turns out that this was the beginning of Avshalom's lies. He made pretend. Okay, don't take it so seriously. His immediate reaction, as we'll see later on, he's going to die for this. But nobody can know. Because Amnon's going to die, but nobody's going to know that he's going to die until he's dead. Because otherwise, they'll protect him. They'll be worried about me. Don't worry, it's okay. He's your brother. It'll be fine. Put it behind you. Let's move on. It'll be okay. But it was at this moment that he was committed to killing Amnon. And it's not so pushed, killing Amnon. Because as far as Avshalom is concerned, he's next in line. No, it's much better. It's taking the malchus. So it's at this moment, in a sense, you can imagine his reaction to this. Oh my God. Oh. Best thing that ever happened.
Maybe there's hope for me after.
Right? Because Kilav was out of the way. That we know. Kilav, it stresses in the pasuk, went to learn, wanted to have nothing to do with politics. He's the guy that's in Lakewood. But he's the guy that's not going to be the melech. Right? So, the next one in line, after Kilav, is Avshalom, the Shlishi. If this happens, there could be nothing better as far as Avshalom is concerned, and it's at this moment that his plans start twirling around in his head that culminate in the ultimate horror of the rebellion of the rebellious son, who now is going to actually try to take over the Malchut. There ain't nobody going to give this to Shlomo, the upstart. Okay, so it all starts here with that first moment. Oh, so little Aminun was it. And so he says, okay, everything will be all right. Don't worry about it. We'll take care of it. Let's put it behind.
And she listens to him.
Now, what he does, now, Melech David Shama et kol advarim ha'ele, note again, Yaakov and Shechem, vayichar lo ma'od, and doesn't do a thing. Note again in the following pasuk the relationship of Yosef the Echav, because Chazal make a point of this pasuk. Lo diber Avshalom im Amnon lemeira ve'atov. Avshalom said nothing good and nothing bad. Ki sane Avshalom et Amnon al dvar asher ina Tamar achato, but did not want it said. He could have said, "I hate you," by the Ache Yosef, as Chazal say. Over there, they were not echad b'pev echad b'lev. They didn't make pretend. They told him straight out, "We think you're an idiot. We hate your guts." And they told him. So lo yachlo l'dabro shalom. They couldn't say anything good to him, but they certainly didn't pretend that they have nothing bad to say to him. Keper kach libam. Mashenken av shalom. The point over here is that he didn't let on. Vayilish natayim yamim. Vayu gozezim. Sound familiar? Vayu gozezim l'av shalom. Bebal Chatzor goes his aim again. How do you like? We're back at Tamar. And he's going, Bal Chatzor im Ephraim. So, friendly, kind Avshalom calls all the royal family. I mean, wouldn't want it to be thought that he wants Amnon to be with him. That might ring some alarms. He's making a family party for the grand shearing festival. Avshalom al Melech. Of course, he invites David too, knowing full well that no chance David's going to be coming. Vayomer Yinena goes Azim Lavdecha Yelech Na Melech Vavadavim Avadecha. Could maybe you consider coming? Vayomer Melech Alav Shalom Albani Anan Elech Kulanu Lonich Baralech. I don't think the whole family should come. It's going to be very hard for you to cater something out there. Vayifas Bodikim. No, please, I really want you to come. And his father says, absolutely not. I'm not going. He says, I'm good, I have a good time, you know. Vayomer Avshalom, so at least Amnon, I mean, can take your place. You know, if you're not going to come, our dear brother, the next in line for the throne, you know. So yelech itano Amnon achi. Vayomer Amalek, why? Lama yelech ima. But you said you would have come. You would have liked to come. You gave me a bracha. Hekin's the only one who could stand in your place. It's, give a lot of honor to the family. So David sends Amnon to his death, exactly as he sent Tamar to her shriva. I mean, this was exactly the mita keneged mita. It's going to come in your own house. You're not careful about sex. Boy, you're going to learn. You send them. You send them straight to the Beit Zonot. You send them straight to the Karev. You'll learn. So Vayifrotz bo Avshalom Vayishlach ito et Amnon, together with the whole family. Veit kol bnei Amnon. Vayitzav Avshalom et Narav. Now he tells the people that are with him, Ru'una ketov leiv Amnon b'yayin, when Amnon gets high enough, V'yamarti aleichem haku et Amnon v'amitem oto, al tirao, just murder him. And don't be afraid. I'm the next in line, I can protect you, so don't worry about it. It's I who am telling you, chizku v'ayu levnei chaya. Come on, this is the beginning of our adventures, man. So be strong. V'yasu nare Avshalom l'Amnon kasher tziva Avshalom. V'yakum l'kol b'nei ha-melech v'yerkevu ish al pirdo v'yanusu. When they see the murder, the entire family gets up, everybody gets into a sports car and zooms away. Meanwhile, somebody SMS's ahead. Shmua ba'a el David le'mor yikav shalom et kol b'nei ha-melech v'lo natar mi ha-mechad. Avshalom has murdered the entire family. There's nobody that's left. If the original thought is that nobody is left, then the relief at finding that only Amnon was killed is immense. So we had the whole family out there, but everybody's fine. Wouldn't hurt a fly. It's only because of this horrible situation, as you know. I mean, so, but first, they think it's all over. He tears his clothes. And he's lying on the ground. The whole place, everybody's sitting on the floor crying. And good old Yonadav ben Shimach, David, who has the whole thing worked out, and once again will prove his brilliance and his insight, exposes himself without even realizing it by making it clear that he knew all along that Avshalom was going to murder Amnon. Absolutely not. Avshalom wouldn't do something like that. I guarantee you it's only Amnon who's died. Ki Amnon vado meki al pi Avshalom hayeta suma. I mean, it all goes back to that horrible day. And there's no question, that was the central thing in his, it was like a standing command on him from that day. He was going to get it. No question about it. This is the good friend of Amnon. This is the guy who knows Amnon well. This is the guy who could have avoided the rape, who could have avoided the murder, who had it all worked out. Now we have a little bit better insight into his personality. There's only one thing that Mr. Yonadav cares about, which is Mr. Yonadav. And now he can show how great he is in guaranteeing rely on Mr. Yonadav, who tells you it's only Amnon who died. And don't even consider the possibility Lemor kol b'nei ha-melech meit. I guarantee you it's Amnon levado meit. And meanwhile, vayivrach Avshalom. Avshalom runs away. Vayisa anar hatzofeh enav. So now there's a lookout, and he sees, so many people that are coming now from the other side, and realizes, I mean, this has got to be now the family. So he shouts out, the family's on its way. Yep, see? There they are. How do you like that? Just what I told you. And it's exactly what happened. And sure enough, as he finishes his words, perfect timing, we have the Bnei HaMelech come in, and they're crying at this great tragedy that has occurred now in the family. Seeing this as the next step, unfortunately, of the four Arba Taim, two are down. Yeled and Amnon, two to go. And meanwhile, David HaMelech was left to mourn over his son all the days. This clearly means, as we're going to see in a few psukim later, all the days of the Avelut, because at the very end it says, Kinicham al Amnon kimet. So obviously, the Kol HaYamim must have meant the time of the Shiur, of the correct Avelut, and not that he was out of control, as the same Lashon appears Legabe Yosef, who didn't die. There it was V'itabel al Kol HaYamim. But here, since he was kimet, the Pasuk closes with the words, Kinicham al Amnon kimet, just two lines later. V'Avshalom barach v'yelech, and where does Avshalom go? He goes right back home to his
maternal grandfather.
El Talmai ben Amihud Melech Geshur,
the king of Geshur. Because after all, that's where Ma'aka came from, right? So, as we said before, Hashlishi, the third son, was Avshalom ben Ma'acha, but Talmai Melech Geshur. So he was exactly where he went back. He always had where to run back to. So if anything brings out the relationship that Chazal are pointing out, it's this. What a crazy place to go. Not crazy at all. It's grandpa.
Where
was it? So, Geshuri we saw before was a Malchus that was in the north, around the southern part of the Golan, or the near Chadmes today.
So there he is, and he's hanging out now with his grandpa.
Vayisham shalosh shanim, and he's there for now for 3 years. And after those 3 years, poor David starts feeling sorry for poor Avshalom, who after all is all alone. And this is my dear son that I love so much. Can I really just let him sit there? Vatchal David HaMelech, letzetel Avshalom. And so he now began to feel, this is kilat hanefesh, it's kaltan nafshi. He begins to feel his love, his desire to see his son again. Ki nicham al Amnon. He'd already, as is the derech of one who dies, the one is mekabel of tanchumim, and as time passes, it's the living that begin to take center place, and the deceased who are no longer part of life. Ki nicham al Amnon, ki met. As Amnon was dead, his attention turned back to Avshalom.